The airport is not moving. Runway 1, the preferred takeoff, is not changing because the wind direction is not changing, correct? So we will continue to have planes flying out of those runways. So we're not going to change that, and we're hoping to find ways to make it a little better. We're trying to talk about what we can do realistically, but we need to start with the understanding that we will continue to have airplanes. The airport's not going. The runways are not changing. That will continue to be the preferred takeoff. And with that, we're going to do an overview of the airport ground-based noise backblast. Is that Bert? You going to do that for us?
Who's on the phone, by the way?
Who's on the phone? Would you share who?
Justin and Gene.
Dean Rindell, HMMH.
And that's it?
Justin, are you there too? No? Yes?
Yes, he's...
Justin and Gene are the consultants.
Yes, I'm here. Sorry, I couldn't get off mute.
You couldn't get off mute.
So one thing that...
My phone was not cooperating.
No.
So okay, excuse
Ricardo,
me, I'm sorry.
Could we go around the table and introduce ourselves
that would
for
be
the
great.
Members of the public? Yes, thank you.
For those,
you
I mean, most of you
yourself.
Have been at the round table, so...
But I think there's a few.
But just let's talk about... Ones. I'm going to start with Council Member Schneider from Millbrae.
Ann Schneider from Millbrae.
Terry O'Connell, Council Member Brisbane.
Elizabeth Lewis. So we're all roundtable members. Elizabeth Lewis, Town of Atherton.
James Castaneda, Roundtable Coordinator.
Bergenong Aircraft Noise Abatement Manager for SFO. Not a roundtable member.
Al Royce, Hillsborough.
And I'm Linda Wolin, representing Supervisor Dave Pine, who's a roundtable member.
And I'm Ricardo Ortiz. I'm a roundtable member, and I'm a member of the City Council in Burlingame.
So if I may, through the
Please.
Chair, when we talked about forming this ad hoc group, I think one of the first things we need to be tasked with is determining what is the ground-based noise parameters of, you know, what we're looking at. Because, you know, there's different definitions of ground-based noise. The idea that I had brought up when I said I wanted a standing topic of ground-based noise takeoffs and arrivals so that we have a slot to put different noise issues into. And so I agreed to be on the start of the ground-based noise committee because we don't really have a definition of what we're going to be looking at as ground-based noise, whether it's just airport operations or the takeoff through the first 20 feet or whatever that is included in ground-based, what is under control of the airport and solutions that can go through the airport, or are solutions that need to go through FAA and TRACON and all the other things. So I think to make sure we're looking at what we're looking at and make that decision should be one of our first topics to make that definition of what we want included in ground-based noise. Here I see we've done ground-based noise / backblast, and backblast can have a lot of different definitions and a lot of different reasons for happening. So I sort of think that we'd
let me define that. Again, because we've talked about this a lot, so my concern and what that really drove me to push for this is the backblast is, and again, correct me if I'm mistaken, the way I understand it is the two events. The first event when they push the full throttle to start rolling, and the second event is when they get airborne, there's I don't know what you call that, it bounces off the runway, and so those are the two. So I don't know how far up in the air the airplane is when that second event happens, but that's what I'm considering backblast, is those two events. So anything beyond that is, it would be part of some other conversation, but go ahead.
Well, I would just sort of answer, you're really looking at item number 5 on the agenda that you would really like to bring up first.
Because
that we should talk about so that we know what we're talking about.
Yes.
But I think that's an important distinction to make early on so that when we have the rest of the conversation, we're all kind of in the same thing. So I appreciate that. I think that's important to settle early on.
I'm just going to chime in that I agree with Councilwoman O'Connell that if we can identify all the different types of noise, we know what to back out if we're dealing with a particular noise. So if, for example, the neighborhoods in Millbrae that are getting hit with backblast, but they're also getting APUs at the terminal, they're also getting forklift trucks, whatever else, if we can back that out, we can concentrate on different noises, and there's different remediation for different noises. So I'm looking forward to agenda item 5.
Good. Yeah. Okay, so anybody else on the scope, what constitutes ground-based noise, or are we all in agreement with that? That's what we're talking about.
If that's what we're talking about, it for our particular problem in Brisbane, we're not necessarily hearing the ground-based noise. We're hearing it when they're talking about backblast, and some of our constituents are talking about after the plane goes by, what you get that comes in and back. And back blasts.
We're defining that in item 5, though. We're not defining it now, right?
Okay.
Because we're defining it now, yeah. We're concerned at Hillsborough about both. We want to know what's causing the noise. We believe a lot of it's airport-driven, but we also believe some of it is from the throttle, the uptake.
The important distinction, and I think this goes back to, and I think all some of the conversations we've had, when we're talking about once the plane is airborne, and we're talking about shifting routes, shifting, that's a whole different conversation than what we're talking about here. And so that's why, in my mind, that's a distinction.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I'm just saying we're not, if we're defining what we're talking about now rather than item 5, I want to go on record as saying I want to make sure we don't exclude the ground noise, the airport, the areas that the airport probably has control over, as well as when the plane takes off. And your definition of 20 feet or whatever it was, that's fine with me. But there's two segments from my perspective. I'd like to understand what's causing it, and did a great point. What are the causes of the noise, and what can we do about them?
Right.
So if we can define all the different causes, then we've got a starting point.
But, yeah, and before we get to that, I think, and I know it's further on the agenda, but I think it's a good point to define it right now, so we're all in the understanding of what we're talking about. Bert, you want to make any comments about that?
Sure. Typically what Councilmember O'Connell's talking about is overflight noise, and as the aircraft passes by. Very different item. What my belief is for this group, we're looking at the airport functions of vehicular and taxiing traffic, aircraft, and then the actual departure noise of departing flights from power application to rotation of breaking ground up to about 100 feet. And then the third one would be arriving aircraft, reverse thrust, yeah, and the stopping in the airport.
Okay.
Well, through the Ricardo.
Yes.
I think a lot of thought went into the order of the agenda, because if we've read the packet, there has been research done. 2000 and 2001 that kind of, you know, talks about everything everybody's talking about here, but now this in this day and age everything's more amplified. I mean, it's like exaggerated, it's like much worse, but it would give everybody a frame of reference as to what was happening back in 2000 2001, how it was examined and discussed, and then how can we use some of this information to then build on our scope of work going forward. I don't know. I think that's kind of a
and
helpful thing, and I think that's why the agenda was organized the way it was.
I thought that Councilmember O'Connell's request to clarify it at the beginning made sense, so I'm going to stick with that. And. So now I'll hand it over to you, Bert. You give us an overview about airport ground-based noise and backblast.
Sure. Typically, the studies we've done in the past, or commissioned to be done in the past, were of aircraft from power application, takeoff roll, and the areas in Millbrae, Burlingame, behind the airport, runways 1, left and right. That's what those two studies were based on.
Is that the same as APU?
No.
Okay.
That's ground-based aircraft noise, so airport noise.
Could we take just a moment and define what APU is so that...
An APU is an auxiliary power unit. It's a small jet engine typically built into the tail of an aircraft. And it's just a... It sets at a given thrust setting, not thrust, but power setting, I should say, because it doesn't provide much thrust at all. It's to power the generators, the air conditioners on the aircraft, so you have lighting, power to set your, what do you call it, your flight plans and everything in the cockpit, and go ahead and make all the settings you need to for the aircraft to go ahead and depart.
So this is when the plane is sitting at the gate.
Sitting at the gate, and occasionally as they're pushed back, and sometimes taxiing out.
Okay.
Typically, they will start one engine to conserve fuel.
Right.
And they'll run that one engine and the APU. But during the taxi, that is typically shut down once they have the one engine started. And then they'll go ahead and start the second or multiple engines after that.
Okay, thank you. So, and I'm sorry, so we were talking about APU, you were talking about...
Power application.
Backwise the two. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I flew out a couple of weeks ago, and it was interesting because we did a series of things. So we left the gate. We were on the gate. Then we had to get backed up, all the passengers off, then all the passengers back on. So the APU ran for about 2 hours because I talked to the pilot about this. And then we taxied out, and then we had to wait. This was all a problem at LAX. And then we sat there running on one of the, what do you call when you're getting out to one? What do you call those roads?
Taxi.
The taxiways, just so I start using the right terminology. So we sat on the taxiway for another 30 minutes or so. Which engines would we have been running then? One jet and one APU?
It depends, but most likely they would have probably started one of the engines because they're taxiing on their own at that point, and they needed the power from the one engine at least to go ahead and maneuver around. The wheels are not powered wheels on that on an aircraft. The only thing they have on them are brakes.
Okay.
Unlike a car or something like that where there's a drive mechanism to the wheel. There is coming technology that's starting to be used of what they call taxi bots. So those are battery-powered little ground vehicles that will take an aircraft out to a start point or the runway if they're so deemed.
And will provide electricity to them so that they don't have to run them?
Yep.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Well, they'll typically run their APUs because they want to keep the air conditioning and things like that.
And I only bring that up because that is yet another kind of noise. It's using engines that we're familiar with, but it's another part of the noise program, is recognizing that sometimes planes sit on those taxiways for a while, depending on conditions. Mm-hmm. And that is contributing to baseline noise, if nothing else.
But to put it in perspective, the difference between the noise generated by an APU versus the noise of an airplane taking off, I mean,
constant noise. It's just
the hum sitting there, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, versus the blast.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Now, past and current work research, are we ready to move on to item number 3?
So were these all the items that we want to get an idea of? So it's, you know, the power application, the APU, forklifts, run up. I mean, do we want to itemize these all now? Construction noise?
Or wait for the scope
run-ups,
of work?
Or how are we?
Well, I'm just trying to put in perspective because, again, most of the noise and what people are hearing and complaining about is the takeoff noise, not so much the vehicles in the, although for Millbrae, I'm sure there's some areas where you can hear
for
those a lot more.
For two specific neighborhoods, you hear them constantly.
Yeah. So I don't know, we want to wait till item number 5 and then just kind of go through the details, and we'll do that. I think we've narrowed it down to a point where we can talk about it, but when we get to the details, we'll get to that. So, James?
I'm sorry, and I just want to give both Gene and Justin an opportunity to chime in here, because I've asked, so as part of kind of merging three and four, I wanted them to kind of maybe chime in a little bit on, you know, sort of the more broader context as far as study that's been performed on ground-based noise, not just at SFO.
At other airports.
At especially. Other airports and everything, to kind of also put that in perspective once we start defining
Excellent.
The scope.
Yes.
So,
tell us who Gene and Justin are.
There are the Roundtable's consultants with HMMH.
They're technical consultants, and they advise not only the Roundtable in San Francisco, but other airports around the country, Baltimore, Los Angeles, you know.
Nationally recognized.
Nationally recognized firm. They're the experts in the room. Mm-hmm. We're the lay people.
Part-time hacks.
That being said, and we've talked you up, guys.
All right. Let's stand up and deliver, Justin and Gene.
Oh, man. Well, that's a good setup. Thank you. Well, I'll just quickly, before I hand it to Gene, I'll quickly just kind of run through some of the studies that have historically been done. There was a Wiley report done for SFO in 2001, which the agenda references, I believe. And that title was The Status of Low Frequency Aircraft Noise Research and Mitigation. There was also a DBN Technologies report done, and that's in 2000 for SFO, Study of Levels, Annoyance, and Potential Mitigation of Backblast Noise. There's also been some studies prepared by HMMH. There was one for Baltimore Airport, and that was low frequency takeoff noise, and that was done in 1998. And one for MSP in 2000. And that was kind of a panel, a little different, but they presented their findings in a report, and that was focused on low frequency noise as well. And also a FAA partner study that was done in April 2007. That it can also be reviewed. And these are just recent studies that I've, that are accessible and I've found that are published out there. So Gene, I don't know if you wanna maybe talk about some of those, especially maybe the ones with that involve HMMH.
And can you just say just-
Yeah, sure, so go ahead.
Can I just add one quick question? All those studies, we have links to all those studies
sure.
on our website, is that correct?
We have two of them on the website, so what I put into this little guy is just the conclusion and summary, because each of those reports are more than like 40 pages or so, but we do have, I do have the Wiley report and the BBN report, and that's, we have that available online.
So we just go to the Roundtable website and there's a link
I could provide.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I could provide the other ones too. They're pretty large in size, but I could provide those to James.
Yeah, I think that'd be good. If there's members of the public who have the time and inclination, they can go in and look at them.
And these two are local studies.
Okay.
Sure.
Wiley and BBN.
Perfect. Thank you. I'm sorry for any interruption.
Yep. No problem.
Okay, so this is Gene. I don't have a lot to add at this point, really, but I did want to at least state my experience. The reports that Justin mentioned from HMMH, I have actually been involved in every one of those. I began my career at HMMH in 1997 and was put on the team to look at the Baltimore-Washington International Airport, BWI, project that Justin mentioned. Because of my experience before coming to HMH was at the Boeing aircraft manufacturer, their noise engineering laboratory, and so my expertise was welcomed on that project, and I've also been involved in the one at Minneapolis as well. A lot of the issues that had been brought to light from those studies was, you know, in addition to the noise levels behind the start of takeoff roll and sideline to start a takeoff roll, you also had like secondary effects of rattling of things on shelves in the home. And that's why a lot of attention was paid to low frequency noise, because it's more typical that it's low frequency noise that causes the rattling. While the noise levels aren't necessarily any higher or lower in different frequencies, it is those other frequencies that cause what we have kind of determined as kind of a secondary effect, if you will, from ground noise, ground-based noise sources, such as, you know, start and takeoff roll for aircraft and those sorts of things, is that it can cause things in the homes to rattle. We've also done other ground noise studies, which we'll have to look at as well, that talk about APUs and taxi noise and those sorts of things. We've done some at like Columbus Airport. So there is more research that we can do to bring up some more reports to really, assuming that the scope of work goes into, you know, total ground-based noise sources, not just start to take off roll. There are other studies that we can bring in for those things as well. So I think that's probably enough of an introduction, but certainly if you have any questions, I'm more than happy to answer them.
Okay, so on number three, any questions for the consultants? Any questions, anybody? Council Member Schneider.
Just Jean, thank you. This is Ann. I would love to see those studies, because two of the Millbrae neighborhoods get quite a bit of that. One of them, Marina Vista, is really within a couple hundred feet of the international terminal. So they experience different noises than other people might experience right there. So I'd love to read those.
Very good.
And I would, this is Al Royce, I would as well. Also, I understand there was a grand jury report back in 2009 or 2010. Did they address any of these issues? And I haven't had a chance to look at it. I just found out about it.
I don't think the ground,
recall it
no.
All? They didn't deal with this? Okay.
Yeah, and just to dovetail into number four here, I'll be real quick, Chris. I think it's going to be more valuable for the group to talk about the scope of work. I did try to do my best in pulling out any prior conversations or, you know, anything that the roundtable did. So that's kind of what I put together, was those two reports and their summaries. Mm-hmm. And then we have some minutes from 2001 that sort of just summarizes what those were. And one of the big takeaways is just sort of where they brought it back to, say, to kind of revisit this when new technology becomes available and so on and so forth. So it was more kind of acknowledgement of you know, what the low frequency noise was and everything. So past that, you know, without doing a ton of more research into the minutes and stuff, I think this is kind of where we last had a thorough conversation in regards to low frequency noise.
Wait, let me just ask.
I was gonna, because I read that and I said, wow, that's 2001. And Mark Church was a Millbrae council member or mayor at that time, and Dan Quigg were both on that committee. So Mark may have become supervisor by then. But so I'm going to go call them both and find out, well, what's happened between 2001 and 2018 from their perspective? That's it? It sort of disappeared after 2001?
From what I can tell, so unless there's something missing from our boxes of stuff, I mean, I have every packet and meeting minutes all the way back to 1981. So if there's any clues that they can give me to kind of focus a little bit more, if something happened in the mid-2000s, that would be helpful.
I know the agenda says action items for members of this committee, so I'm happy to take that one on, and I'll let you know what I find out.
Sure.
Thank you, and thank you for doing... Dan's never come up to me and said, oh, you're on Airport Roundtable, and here's what you should know. So I found that very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and I do have... Oh, I'm sorry, Al.
I see the studies, and they all talk about the consequences of the noise. I'm more interested in what's causing it. What's causing the noise? Who's control over and how we deal with it? So And I know the airport's done a lot of construction over the last decade.
So that's going to be in the next item, is going to be the scope of work, so we can talk about that then, because I absolutely agree with you.
Thank you.
But before we go to the scope of work, is there any comments from any member of the public? Lynn, and this is just regarding the prior studies.
Yes, what strikes me is that it sounds like there's really a paucity of any recent studies, even nationally. We're talking about studies that were done 10 years ago, so I just wondered, are there no current, is no airport currently looking at this problem? Are there any newer studies?
And I guess that's a question for our consultants, or for Bert.
I think we're the only ones really getting back into it right now. Most of the other airports are thinking Metroplex.
So we're trailblazers.
Again,
multitaskers.
Yes.
We've always been.
Very good.
Yes.
Thank you, Bert. And do you want to comment? Let me just finish. If there's any more comments from the consultants on that question? Any current studies?
This is Gene. I'm not aware of any current studies going on right now in terms of the backblast issue. There have been some more recent studies on ground-based noise at airports. We can bring those up, before, the next meeting or whatever. But as far as backblast noise, I don't think there's any newer studies than those mentioned earlier.
Excellent. Sir, you had a question there?
This may be part of your next agenda item, but I'll just mention, what those past studies don't seem to obviously address is anything that's changed between now and then.
And absolutely, because obviously they happened way before what we all perceive to be a change. So, but that's a great point. Keep that thought. And could you tell me what your name and where you're from?
Curtis Sanford. I live in Hillsborough. I'm a pilot, and I've also served on the San Carlos Airport Pilots Board, so I'm familiar with airports and noise issues.
Excellent. Thank you for being here.
Are we capturing the public? Did they sign a list?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, one more and then we'll move on.
My name is Janet Yee. I'm from Millbrae. And I too am concerned about these studies. They're 10 years old. What type of new aircraft have we been using since then? And on the describing the events of the noise, there were two events, the initial warm-up and then the takeoff. In my neighborhood, we experience a third event, and that's when they're queuing in the takeoff. Approximately 10:30 p.m. every night, they start lining up the red eyes. And as they sit, I can't even hear my TV.
Okay, Ms. Yee, so I'm going to tell you, keep that thought, because that's the kind of things that we want to do in the scope of work, and we're going to talk about them, but thank you very much for being here. And with that, I think we should move on, because obviously I think the scope is the one that's going to take us a long time, and I absolutely have a really hard stop at noon, so I do have to get going. So scope of work, James, I don't know if you want to kick that off.
Or let Linda kind of take the lead on that. She had some an outline and some thoughts
on
how to kind of focus us on what the things that we need to look at.
Excellent. Linda Wallen from Supervisor Pine's office.
Thanks. So I've been thinking about this. Most of the notes actually coming from Councilmember Ortiz, but I reorganized them in my head for purposes of discussion.
So what, mine are not organized? Is that what you're trying to say?
I didn't mean to say it that way.
Hi, that's how but I took it.
To focus the discussion.
It's the day after Halloween.
Inspired.
Candy or something. Anyway, I think something we need, one concept is the data. What data do we have? What data are we missing? What data do we want to see? So I think, and that speaks to these different kinds of noise events, and is there a metric to measure them? So this is a problem we have on the roundtable all the time with the airbase noise, is what are we using to measure the noise, and does the measurement match what people's experience are? Because I know many of you are experiencing what Gene was describing as the rattling in your homes, and that's not really measurable. We know it's low frequency. Is there a low frequency metric that we can use? I don't know. And is that useful at all? So what data do we want? One concept.
Great.
Another concept is infrastructure, and maybe Bert can speak to that even now, and I don't know if this is useful or not, but there's been some discussion of the infrastructure SFO, and what does that have to do with the noise or how people are experiencing it? So are any of the what are they called? The things at the
sound
end of
barriers.
Thank you. The sound barriers, have they changed in the last 10 years? What has changed? Does that have any impact on noise? Is there any, the construction with the new hotel and other things along the access road, does any of that,
and
what's new?
Removal of a building
removal
in addition of another one.
Right.
So the question
the fire stations.
Any, right? Yeah. Any of that. Like, what is the new infrastructure that's been there? I don't know if you want to say 10 years or last 15 years that has been constructed or taken down or whatever. And is that affecting how things are
bouncing
right off of the infrastructure? And is that a useful thing to know? And does that maybe we need a technical analysis of how sound bounces to know whether those things are useful? And then is there any, what are the actions that are SFO related? For example, the construction of sound barriers is an airport function, but the use of APUs, for example, is an airline choice. And there's been some, the Roundtable and BERT have worked in the past with some airlines to reduce their use of APUs, and I think some have voluntarily.
We,
he can we'll, speak
we'll
to that.
I'll do that. Reduce it to a 30-minute on arrival, 30-minute prior to departure, unless they need for, as they have speaking for incident the other day.
Yeah. So the point of that is some things the airport has, say, complete control over, which is construction of any of these barriers, just for example. Actions by airlines are, call them voluntary, and in the case of the APUs, there's been discussions with airlines in the past to encourage the better behavior of not using the APUs if they're sitting there for longer than 30 minutes. So what are the what actors do we need to have conversations with? I don't know if the hotel construction is having any impact, or the terminal construction is having any impact on anything, but do the construction managers have a role here? So those are my three kind of buckets. That's not to say that's not a decision on the actual noise events that we, that earlier discussion that Councilmember O'Connell raised. So.
Well, let me just make a real comment. I think most of the people who are sitting here, members of the public, are here because they perceive an increase in the noise. I think we all of us who live right next to SFO, we accept that we're going to hear some noise and we can live with that. The question is, the question really is, for some of us, we feel that noise has gone up. We want to, first of all, find out if that's true, and if it is, what caused it, and if it's simply more volumes and atmospheric conditions, well, that we would need to find that out. So to me, the one thing that is important to me, and I don't know if you members of the public will agree with this, but is I'd like to find out why it changed, and if it did.
Could I clarify that? Just
please.
Like, from what time period to now? I mean, over the last 5 years, 10 years, you know,
I'd say the
can
last
I one qualify?
I'd say the last
2 years?
18 months to 2 years.
Five?
But it's been really pronounced in the last, what, year?
3 years, 2015.
Last 2 years, you know, kind of bracket it a little bit.
Right, that's okay. Excellent. That's an excellent point.
So that may have to do with the infrastructure that I was discussing, or not. I don't know.
Yeah.
I actually don't know the answer.
Well, I think, again, I think at the end of the day, we're going to find out that it's not just one thing that caused it, and we're going to find out that absolutely volumes have something to do with it. But, again, we want to ask the question. So I would like to, part of what I'd like to address is, can we figure out why there was a change?
I'm going to throw some fairly complicated questions out here. If you look at the 65 decibel, which triggers whether a resident can get some kind of remediation, there are only three houses in Millbrae in the 65 decibel. When you read the old report back in 2001, granted based on stage 3 engines, they say that there are areas of Millbrae hitting 90 decibels. Oh, those were stage 2s. Well, I can tell you from my house, you have to stop talking. You can't hear the television set. And that happens for hours at end. It's not every 5 minutes or things like that. So my questions are, do we have the monitoring devices in the right place? Are the monitoring devices capturing the type of noise that the various airport noise, in this case, I'm not talking about my two neighbors close in, but the whole city, are we capturing the noise properly?
Can I stop you right there for a second? Because I think that's an important point. The devices, and I forget who said this to me, so I'm not certain about it, but that the devices that are being used are used to monitor overflights, not ground-based noise. Is that correct, or are they they're capturing the same?
It's typically what it's for, yes.
Okay.
Now, if I may, the devices work by correlating a noise event to a flight track. That's why we say they're typically made for that. As far as the backblast area, we noticed we did have some issues a long time ago with trying to correlate, because our track started about a quarter mile off the end of the runways, because the aircraft had to be airborne. And to do anything with the capturing net, you have what's called a point of closest approach, a sphere around your noise monitor. And so that is where you want to find your aircraft going through or touching.
So that is all in relating to identifying the aircraft causing that noise. But when we're talking about just the level of noise, are we really capturing with that device the same way that, I mean, is it accurate, is what I'm asking?
We believe so, yes.
Yeah, okay.
I'm going to differ with you, because if we're capturing the noise, mm-hmm. and yet a good portion of Millbrae, most of Millbrae, is not considered 65 decibels, then we're not capturing the noise. Because I will tell you, from about 10:30 at night until 1:30 or 2 o'clock in the morning, it is a constant roar of backblast noise. So we're not going to be able to argue it here. And let me finish. What if we can do this as ad hoc members? Maybe one of our take homes today is to try to write better questions that can go into the scope of service. I know, and that one's quiet.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Okay.
So my question is, going back to my question, so do we have the monitoring devices in the right place? We've talked a little bit about A-level measurements and C-level. I've got to tell you, I've gone to the trainings, and I've read the documents, and I still don't have a really good grasp of what A-level, C-level means. And as James pointed out at the last roundtable, all of our jobs as the elected representatives is to help our residents understand it. So if I don't understand it, I can't explain it. So I think we've got to better describe some of these things that you, the technical folk, it's intuitive now. It's not intuitive for me yet. So knowing the difference, and is A and C the best way of doing it? And I know some of us, when we get together, we talk about there's the noise itself, and then there's the duration of the noise. And when the duration becomes 60 minutes out of 60 minutes, that brings me to my next question. How do we define annoyance? So when I'm reading through this, I'm going, golly, is annoyance, I'm gardening in the backyard and I can't hear my radio playing? Or is annoyance, at 1 o'clock in the morning, I still can't get to sleep because those planes are taking off? So I think we might need to look at how one measures annoyance. I know noise we all experience differently, but there still has to be some way to categorize the difficulty. Because if we're going to go back to the airlines, to me, my ultimate goal is Boeing, Airbus, you need to start working your engines to stop this. And it's going to be a technical thing, and it's probably going to take decades to get it. But if we don't start challenging them, they're not going to deal with it. So where do we measure it, how we grade the annoyance level, the different types of noise, are those monitors really getting them the right way? And then again, when I read this, and I live about a block and a half from here, and I'm not in back of runway one, and yet I'm getting the backblast noise. So I'd love to see maps of, and it's probably, if you're doing a runway 28 takeoff, that noise is going to go into a slightly different direction. And as Rich Newman tries to explain to me, he goes, backblast comes off in these circular patterns like that. I've never seen a map that shows that kind of noise. So that's part of educating us. Sometimes it can be less annoying if you understand why it is. Sometimes it's more annoying because you go, golly gosh, why can't we fix this then? So I'd love to see mapping, because frankly, and I know changing the decibel contour means money to the airport because more homes would qualify for remediation. Somehow, in times past, the airport remediated my house. They put in new windows. So why that contour changed when it is clearly noisier today than it has ever been, and I grew up here. It is noisier today than it was in the 60s. So getting a handle on that and looking at those contours, looking at the waves of backblast noise. And I think this will sound really goofy, but here in Millbrae, we understand when there's bad weather that you're gonna land right on top of us. Literally, I can read the numbers off the bottom of the plane too from my house. We understand that. I think that's a given. We want everybody safe. But, you know, work with us in giving us those maps that show where is that. Janet lives over here by Cappuccino. So that's a new neighborhood for me to go sit in and listen. So it's affecting by far more neighborhoods. And we all know that sound bounces. So we need to figure out, is it only bouncing on an inversion layer? Or is it bouncing just in general? How do the bouncing work? I know you spoke about the noise barriers. To me, they're blast barriers, correct? Mm-hmm. They're not noise barriers.
Oh. Yes, that's true.
Yeah, so it's a different thing. My city manager, we were talking about this meeting before. He used to work in San Diego, and he talked about some things San Diego is doing on various forms of muffling sound. So maybe we need to expand out and look at the technology for sound absorption.
Okay, and can I interrupt you for a second?
Sure.
And maybe you go to the consultants and see if you have any comments on the monitoring devices. And I like this whole concept of annoyance measurement versus just noise measurement. So if you guys have any comments on that you can help us with.
This is Justin. I'll start, see if Gene has anything to add. I just wanted to make most of these studies that have been done, and something that I would recommend is doing additional measurements. And that comes in the form of noise, vibration, and potentially weather kind of together. A lot of these devices now, these portable noise monitors, can record at all, not just 1 second average LEQs.
I'm sorry, could you explain what that means? I don't know what that means.
Just one second values instead of what you would do is get down on a frequency basis. So at all frequencies, what's the level, not just what's
got it. Okay.
The instantaneous average level. And so they could do that, and they could also do in all waiting. So what they're capable of is actually gathering all the information in one shot in various different weightings and metrics. And it's something that I would probably, you know, most of these studies incorporate some sort of portable measuring. And that could kind of coincide with noise and vibration. If there's rattling issues, you could coincide those together. So just wanted to let you know that the technology has changed to where these devices are very portable and could acquire all that information in one device. Gene, do you have anything to...
The current monitoring devices that we have, we do have many portable ones. Do they have that technology, or are they older?
Most of our portables are a little older, but we do have the ability to go out and spread into frequency spectrums. We're in the process right now of procuring new noise monitors, and they will be the new technology that Justin mentions.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing that we don't have and we use consultants for is... the device is known as accelerometers.
And accelerometers?
Accelerometer. Okay. Accelerator. So we're talking about mounting a device on a wall that measures vibration.
Oh.
In a house? You mean like in a room?
I'd like to volunteer my house.
We wouldn't say you're crazy.
No, but it's, well,
there's
two different things. There's a
Wait, I'm sorry. Let me just, we'll get to the public comment in a second. Let me just finish this. Okay, so any of the committee members, any other questions?
I have one question.
Yes.
And I know we've talked about this before, but when we're measuring noise events and we're talking about exceedances over the normal, everything else that's not a noise event goes into community noise, and it gets the basis for what an event is. Mm-hmm. And when a lot of the ground-based noise is a constant noise. And so you have to figure that you're adding upon that the exceedances or the large events. And how are we measuring that when so much of it is considered community noise, and when it comes really to airport ground noise, their community noise level, their background all the time noise level is already extreme, yeah. Yeah. And has put it up higher on the spectrum. So I think we need to look at a way that we can take that community noise or background noise and include it in these studies, so we really know what the annoyances and the actual ground level impacts are. And how we do that, I don't know,
yeah.
But it's something that we see in Brisbane that we're getting attributed a lot of community noise that is really airport noise that we can't attribute to a specific airport.
It becomes part of the baseline.
It becomes part of our baseline, just like the freeway mm-hmm. and the train tracks. So it's something that I think we need to try to figure out a way to include all these noises.
Okay.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because actually City Manager and I were talking about that. And in all fairness to the airport, we have the train tracks. And we've got the electrification project, because I think, Bart, you helped me with one of those. We had this incredible night of this constant sound, and we couldn't tell if it was airport or if it was electrification or some other thing that's happening. So again, we have to know what they are so that we can back them out or say that, yeah, we're already dealing with noise. We're getting terminal noise. We know we're getting terminal noise. Maybe not where Janet and I live, but two other neighborhoods get that. And so therefore, when those incidents happen, they're already annoyed. Now they're really annoyed.
Okay, so.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, Al, go ahead.
Explanation. This new devices that measure noise in the homes, it can now measure ground noise as well as overhead flights. Is that correct?
Well,
and can it tell us where it's coming from?
The accelerometer is basically going to take an event that vibrates, low frequency. Best example that I give people is the home stereo. Today's home stereos, you have multiple speakers. One of them's a large bass cube, and they'll tell you to put that anywhere in the room. It's non-directional, preferably in a corner, and it just will encompass the whole room. Whereas the smaller speakers, the tweeters, things like that, they handle the highs, the trumpets, things like that. You want to focus them at the listener, very specific. So A-weighted noise, which is what the human ear hears in, tends to handle more of the highs. And then the bass, the low frequency, these kids' cars with the loud stereos in them that thumping down the street, those are the low frequency. That's the one that creates the vibration.
Right.
So this will measure that?
The accelerometers will measure vibration.
Okay. Yes. Okay. But it will not be able to tell where the vibration is coming from, right?
No, it's dumb. It just tells. One thing that I was talking to Gene Rendell quite a while ago about it, he was saying that, well, gosh, a homeowner walking through the house creates more vibration than a lot of the aircraft do, mm-hmm. as far as the generalities of it. Now, it's not saying all. It's not all encompassing, but generally.
And what is the cost of those, if I can ask?
Accelerometers, Gene, Justin, I don't know what they cost.
I mean, if you want to buy like a portable vibration unit with the accelerometer, it could be $8,000 to $10,000.
And how many are we purchasing?
We have none.
We have none, but we're contemplating buying them.
But did you
contemplating buying them?
No,
oh,
we would
okay.
do it through a study.
I misunderstood you, okay.
Right.
Okay.
We don't use them, so
and you could rent them. Consultants usually we have them available, but they could also be rented.
Oh, okay.
And okay, guys, one of the things I want to try not to get too granular here. We want to just kind of keep in general terms of what we're thinking of studying and what everybody, so that we can make sure we touch all points. I think we've had some very good discussion up to now. So I'm going to open it to the members of the public and see if there's issues, sir. And again, what we're looking for is what items, what would you like studied as a scope of work in this?
Yeah, actually, this is a good moment to type. I've got a noise that I've been having, a constant rhythmic noise
like air conditioning units. And I'd like to see that study, because it could be coming from the airport buildings with air conditioners maybe on the roofs, and the sound can be attenuated. So I would like to see that. And I was at Mills Hospital a few months ago in the parking lot, and they have underground air conditioning units, I assume, going. It's the same sound, and it's continuous, and I'm getting it 5 miles away. So it could be coming, if the unit's in the airport, if it is the airport, on the roof, that could be, I could be hearing that. And that's in Hillsborough, 5 miles away, up by 280.
Okay, and remind me of your name?
Louis Maravilla.
Thank you, Mr.
McGuire. I have another meeting.
Okay, appreciate it. Thank you for coming.
Sir, are you in Hillsborough or Burlingame?
I'm in Hillsborough.
In Hillsborough, so that general reception.
Okay,
sir. Okay, I heard a lot go round and round on the noise monitor, so I just wanted to kind of, I'm an engineer, I like to synthesize things down. It sounds to me like there's three issues on noise monitors. We're talking about getting noise monitors that can assess ground noise, and the three issues are, do they collect the right frequencies and accelerations? That's a technical issue for the boxes. Sounds like they're pretty close, they're pretty good. There's a question of correlation. The airport, when it gets a noise event from a noise monitor, if they can't correlate it to a flight, they throw it away. They say that wasn't us. And because these events are not appearing in the flight-aware tracks, it sounds like they're having trouble correlating ground noise to the flights. So they're probably throwing away most of these ground noise events because they're not correlating the flights. They're saying that's not us. And the third thing is sighting. I believe the current monitors are largely sighted to track overflights. And there's a question as to whether the monitors are in the right places to track noise, because we're talking about the 65, you know, even in the BBN report, they talk about 70 to 90 decibel noise, you know, from takeoffs and along the same, and I suspect that from reading that summary, I suspect there's maps in that report that will indicate where this noise is taking place.
Can I just ask a favor? If you think about it when you get home, could you send us an email with your, points, and I wouldn't like to miss any of them. So if you could send me, you can send it to me or you can send it to James. And
I'll get an email.
And that was really good. Any other comments from
that? Yeah, I didn't hear any discussion of tangible steps to identify what has changed. And I people say 2 years, but I suspect in the last 2 to 4 years, things like the EMAS installation, the engineered materials, which moved the aircraft further down the runway. If you read again in that BBN report, which is quite good, it says that you need, to get noise attenuation, you have to have barriers near the aircraft, which means if you push an aircraft further down the runway for takeoff, you're going to increase its radiated noise signature. And so, you know, so there's those issues as well. And finally, I heard it as a caveat, an absolute at the beginning of the meeting that we're not changing airport operations, but I think some investigation of what conditions runway one is the preferred runway would be worth examining, because this is clearly a runway one issue.
Yeah, and thank you very much. And again, if you could put it in writing and send it to us, that would be great, because you said a lot, and I don't know if we captured everything you said. I think we have a recorder, but if you could put it in writing, would be fabulous. So thank you. Any other member of the public? Lynn?
Thank you for bringing up that point. That was one of the things that I wanted to mention. It doesn't really matter if we can correlate a very loud event with a plane that's taking off. I agree that information is usually then deemed to be community noise. And like, personally, I don't care if it can be correlated to a specific flight. If it's emanating from the airport, it's important. And then the other thing I just wanted to mention is, with the breakaway, the materials and the moving of the takeoff portion, and then also it appears that the taxiing intersections had also changed as part of that. So where the planes are turning around to line up, I think that also needs to be identified, because that sounds like that was a change in the past 2 years.
So. Good, and I think follow up with that. There was also a discussion about where the, correct me, Bert, if I'm mistaken, is NADP takeoff procedure, where they're going up steeper, is that the correct acronym?
NADP, noise abatement departure procedure.
Yeah, so the question was whether they're, because that means they're going up steeper, and what impact that has on our noise too. So that was another thing, that talking about procedures. Any other member of the public?
the time frame from 10:30 till approximately midnight, it's constant. And at 12:22 a.m., there is some humongous plane I'm picturing in my mind. It starts with two events. There's the warm up, and as it takes off the runway, and then when there's a liftoff, it just rumbles so loud. And then approximately 2 a.m., there's another flight that's extremely loud and wakes a lot of people up.
Okay, so that's, that'll be all part of what we're looking into. Anybody else, anything to add to the scope of the work?
Well, it's just a comment question. Okay. That, first of all, thank you everyone for having this OTAG group, and thanks for the engineers and Lynn and everyone else that's involved. But I'm just a resident of Burlingame for the past 50 years, been in my house since 1974. And I feel like I live on Balboa Avenue and Broadway between Carmelita. And I feel like there's a jet engine on the corner. I mean, that's an incredible loud noise. Just roaring and rumbling, you know. So I hope all this eventually will help us get past that, you know. And then you realize you're talking about levels of noise and different things that happen. So say around 3 o'clock or so, you know, I need to get up and go to the bathroom, okay. So, and I go back to bed, and I'm like, oh my God, it's so quiet and it's so nice. Hmm. It used to be this way. So that makes me really sad that.
Well, and just to answer that, the reason we're all sitting here,
right,
is because there's a lot of us who go through that every
right.
night.
Right.
So that's exactly what we're trying to do. We're
right.
trying to figure out,
yeah.
I mean, the whole idea is, are we trying to figure out
yeah.
why has it gone up and what can
right.
we do about it?
Well, and I hear you saying that, and that's what I appreciate,
but it just
made me feel good, like, why is this engine on my corner?
Right. Yeah. So thank you for being here. Appreciate your comments.
Okay. Oh, while on the airplanes, is there any aftermarket technology that we can do on the aircraft itself?
Again, we're trying to do is figure out what the scope is of what this committee is going to do.
Okay.
So
yeah.
that's probably part of what we're going to study is what the changes in the engines are and what the impact that's going to have. Because we've already seen an impact on that where the engines have changed, so they're a lot quieter. But we want to see what's coming up. Learn a little bit about that's part of what we can do about it is going to be the engine technology. Any other comments?
So
yes.
Could I, Peggy McLaughlin from Hillsborough, could I just ask Bert, you said you're in the process of procuring new noise monitors. How many are you procuring and what is the impetus for that purchase? When was that PO started?
It's in process right now.
The PO is?
The RFP.
Okay, and then how many are you?
We're looking to do about 38, and that would be our 29 in the community. Our 4 portables, we're going to double that to 8, and then our ground-based units for the airfield at the run-up areas.
Great, thank you.
Thank you.
She reminded me of one last thing. When I heard Ivar at the last meeting talk about, or money meetings, that the airport is handling more passengers and they're doing that addition of flights but also larger airplanes. So I think one of the problems that we've experienced over the decades is from the days of smaller propeller planes, which we didn't hear, to the first jets. But even if you've got a stage 4 or are there stage 5s flying, if they're bigger and heavier, they're going to have, I believe I'm correct, greater backblast noise. So while it's good that you're handling more people, but you're going to these planes that actually increase ground-based noise.
Mm-hmm. That's
whether it's a stage 3 or a stage 4, because if you read those old reports, low frequency noise is not I was trying to figure out if this was a word. You cannot remediate it. Not remediatable.
It's funny because when Ivar brought that up, I was thinking the same thing. You have planes that are heavier. I'm using more thrust to take off. I'm making more noise, I'm assuming. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, when you consider that all the U.S. carriers have ceased using the 747-400, very large 4-engine aircraft that generated a lot of thrust, that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have the newer 777s, Boeing 777, the Airbus A350, the A380, Boeing 787s. They're all new aircraft, and the 787, new 777s, and the 350s all have very much new technology. Mm-hmm. One of the interesting parts, when I met the test pilot for the 380 when they brought the test bed here, we spoke with him and said, how are you able to generate much lower noise levels with much larger aircraft? And he says, we only use 65% thrust when we're at full thrust.
Oh, really? Oh,
and it's like, interesting.
That's interesting.
But measuring low frequency noise in addition to in-flight noise?
The rating of that aircraft is much lower across the board.
And the rating is across the board?
Yeah.
Okay.
The certification levels.
Okay, guys, I want to make sure we get to the end of the meeting. I think we have a lot of items for the scope. James, are you that? Give you something to munch on?
Digesting, yes.
So we have anything? I want to ask, especially members of the subcommittee and members of the public, if you have any additional items that you want to submit for our consideration, because at some point we need to sit down and narrow all this, because we've talked about a lot of things. So we need to sit down and find out kind of the large group and group them all together so that we can narrow the scope. So
yeah,
I think
one of the big takeaways right now is what site conditions have changed. I think that's probably the biggest theme that I can hear from
which I think is a takeaway for Bert, sorry to say.
So just to reiterate what Lynn said, site conditions and site procedures, changes in taxiing.
Well, no, I think those are two different ones, because site conditions, yeah, in one case it leads to site procedures with the runways. But I think I would think they're two different ones, because there's some other things that have happened even more recently. So anyway, I would keep those separate. So site conditions,
we're hearing a lot of questions about possible mitigation. I think that if there is a study to be done, much like these other studies that have been done, they also bookend it with what are possible mitigations. So what technologies have come up in the last 18 years that could be considered, back glass fencing or whatever the case may be. So there's that part of it. I'm trying to think what else.
Well, measurement. I think measurement.
Yeah,
and
measurement of what's the baseline? What is it? What is the metric that we are using to determine annoyance?
And I love that annoyance concept.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yes, ma'am. I've heard a lot of discussion about the constant humming of the APUs, and the use of the APUs. Whether or not the airlines can reduce or the use of APUs, I mean, that would be at a cost to the comfort of the people on board. At that,
they plug into the terminal. It's a cost of using jet fuel to cool the aircraft versus plugging into the terminal. They would have to pay more to SFO.
So are there...
Hold on just a second. Elizabeth, you had more...
Go ahead.
Well, about the APUs, I mean, maybe there's new technology that would have silent or electronic APUs rather than like a generator kind of a thing that we're not looking at. Or is there another way of cooling and running the aircraft instead of an APU?
Okay, so let me. I only have 15 minutes to go, and I want to make sure we get to all this. So I'm just trying to synthesize to a few items. We could do APUs as a separate item.
Yeah.
But James, you were talking about, and go back through the list again.
Data.
We had collection. The issues were infrastructure changes, collection methods and technology.
Data.
Metric and collection. And mitigation. So I'm just kind of going off my head.
Monitoring devices. We talked about procedures.
Procedures, which is what Peggy brought up.
Procedures.
Changes in procedures at the airport
in
this period of time?
Conditions and procedures.
Conditions and procedures. So that's sort of still in the bucket.
Yeah.
A. Mm-hmm. Okay.
A, B, and C. So I see this as a sort of a three-part thing. Site condition. What has changed? What are the conditions the last? Both with conditions and procedures. How do we measure and what's our metric to determine
annoyance,
and where to go, and then mitigation.
Well, and also embedded in the what's our metric is what do we need to do to collect that metric? So, for example, do any of the existing monitors or any of the new monitors that BERT is already procuring, will they do the trick, or do we need another thing?
Accelerometers.
We need accelerometers, and
you do that through a consultant, too.
Okay. Well, it's just,
you know, implicit in there, what has changed is the infrastructure comments, because there has been a lot of construction, and I'm really interested what impact that has had on noise. Are the barriers high enough? Your comment about, someone made the comment about planes further off. Mm-hmm. How has that been tested? What impact has that had?
Right.
And what mitigation would arise from that?
We have another issue, too, here with the, you talk about barriers being high enough. Mm-hmm. We have terrain here. And so typically, however high you build your wall, the lee of it, the distance from the wall to behind, is protected.
Yeah.
Beyond that, no. And then if you have terrain, it goes above, and it's above the wall anyway. Yeah. So that's a big issue we have here.
Can I throw in one rule? So you're talking about construction.
Yes.
Our cities have changed dramatically. Mm-hmm. Do you think that we've had more construction of high-rise buildings and things, and so is noise now bouncing off of them? Are there more massive air conditioning units on some of these large development projects that are adding to it? I mean, there's just, you know, how is that related or interrelated?
Right.
So, I mean, I think
changes in tree scape, too.
Yeah. I don't think Hillsborough has had a lot of high-rise construction. Neither has Atherton, but...
Okay, and you had something else?
I would dearly love mapping of where the ranges are for these other types of noise, because that might...
You mean like a noise contour?
I'm not saying that we necessarily have to look at changing the noise contour yet until we have data, but... I don't believe the 65 decibel is looking at the backblast noise.
Sure.
And it's not looking at noise bounce. Right.
And you did make the comment earlier about if there's a way to map that kind of backblast noise. And I'm not sure. I mean, that would be something to, as a fair question. Look.
And because it works out like this, I don't know. And because there's the two episodes, you know, the initial thrust and the greater thrust down there, which way does it go? And as I said, from my house, where I am not near this angle on runway 1, but it's clearly there, am I getting runway 28?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it may not be, and that's what Mr. Newman tried to say, and he goes, like, even if they do that procedure where you come off this way and then do a
mm-hmm.
tall thrust, it may not be what you want. Right, we need to know what the effects might be if they change a procedure.
Well, that was part of what, yeah. Because
so bucket B, data collection metric.
But mapping can help a lot of people.
Sure.
When you read A level, C level, maps can say, I am experiencing it.
Okay, so I think we have pretty good guideline of what we're going to go forward with. And so the question next is, who's doing what and what do we do to move forward?
So can I amend that question also to say that I think there's some things that we can do, quote unquote, internally. Sorry, BERT, it's back on you. But like, for example, infrastructure changes at SFO is a known fact that SFO, someone at SFO knows, not necessarily the noise office, but that is presumably, BERT, correct me if I'm wrong, but presumably a easy thing to collect. It doesn't require an outside consultant to go ask the airport what they have. You can tell us.
And it's particularly just at the foot of runway 1, right? That's what we're looking at.
Or any of these other, what was taken down also. Right?
No, absolutely.
Yeah.
But I'm saying we're not talking about the whole area of the airport, although I
don't know.
So
but
we're looking at last 2 years, last 5 years.
I would go last 5 years.
Five, maybe.
Five.
So that's a quote-unquote easy piece of data to collect. Another, Justin and Jean, I'll ask you, some of the stuff we've been talking about, certain kinds of metric collection and the procurement of accelerometers, for example, or information about what other airports have done to mitigate some of this low-frequency noise, that also seems like data that is a little bit already available and collectible, or am I wrong?
This is Gene. No, you're correct. That data is available. The Baltimore-Washington International Airport, BWI, project, they actually did additional noise mitigation to try to deal with low-frequency noise. So the results are in that report.
By the way, you raise a point. If there are other studies similar to this that have gone on around the country, there isn't?
No, we asked the question and
we said no studies, but if there are communities that have sort of explored like we're doing, are there any?
I think the answer we got earlier wasn't the no, and that's when I used our term as trailblazers. Mm-hmm. So I think
nothing.
That we're...
So Orange County's done nothing? I mean, Orange County's done nothing, and San Diego, I mean...
Yeah,
I find that hard to believe, frankly. I'm just thinking if there's some questions or best practices or results already done.
I think to clarify, it was nothing recent.
Exactly. And I think the explanation was everybody was focused on next gen, and so I think that's why I kind of...
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, if we could inquire, I'd like to at least see
a data search. On the VWI study, do we know if any of their recommendations were implemented? And if so, did they do any good?
Yeah, so the recommendations were implemented. I think they did at least one house and maybe two or three. And the added noise treatment, if you will, to the homes did provide a little bit more reduction in overall noise level. Didn't necessarily reduce the low frequency noise level as measured inside the house, but the homeowners, we also did a survey with that, and the homeowners found it to be less vibrations in their home, but they found the same with the homes that didn't get the extra treatment. And so in the end, I think it was the extra treatment wasn't found as being necessary as long as you still did the typically recommended sound insulation treatments for airport projects.
Okay, so this was not a mitigation on the airport site, it was mitigation on individual homes.
Yes.
Okay, and then one other question that is sort of throwing this out to Bert. I would assume that Cal OSHA has a noise study at the airport where they need to have ear protection, and they've got a certain decibel level of what their exposures are, and I think that might be a good start to be able to get that from their records on what their sound is producing and how much ear, because that would be a health indication that we might be able to get some of their OSHA records as far as where they're required to have hearing protection and or other precautionary safety. And that might give us an indication of what noise levels have been in the past and what they're currently at. And we might be able to correlate that to some of their ground-based operations.
Great. 85 decibels over a work period.
Okay, guys.
I don't need to get into the details right now. I'm just saying that I think that might be a good place to get some information.
We need to kind of take care of, there's a couple other things that are still pending that we've given Bert a few things. I would talk about the measuring, the metrics. Actually, we do have some data. I would love to be able to look at the data for the Millbrae-Burlingame and...
Hillsboro.
So whatever data we can have for the last 5 years showing to see if those monitors actually picked up an increase so that they confirm what we're all feeling. I'm sorry, I'm just trying to wrap it up. Unfortunately, I have to go. So,
Burlingame.
Burlingame. Did I say Burlingame? Yeah.
Just
so,
one question, because the gentleman in the back corner said that if you can't correlate the noise, it may get dumped out. So, do you maintain what data has been dumped out?
They keep all the data, don't you?
We don't keep all of our 1 second data, no, over time, but we do keep the averages and what was delineated, yes.
Okay.
And you keep the complaint.
But that might mean something for future studies might be we can't dump that data.
Okay, so can
we have to help you store it.
Can we have, okay, so as far as measuring devices and what we can do moving forward or... can we get somebody to look into the difference between what we're using and what's out there available for ground-based noise?
Yeah, I think Gene and Justin, we can test that in addition to going back to metric collection and research already done. So maybe we can have a summary, for example, about the BWI to kind of...
Of the useful stuff that is
right,
in there.
Right, right. So maybe producing some sort of summary that would be relevant of the useful items in there. And Bert looking into infrastructure and then data from last 5 years, Millbrae, Burlingame, Hillsborough.
Right.
Got it.
Lynn, I'm sorry, I'm going to just keep going because we have to adjourn pretty soon. So send me an email with your final thoughts and I'd be happy to pass it on to...
Probably...
Okay,
So one quick thing. So logistic meeting-wise, when would we like... How frequently would we want to do these meetings and next?
I think that really depends on how quickly we can get some information, and perhaps we want to do them at every other alternate with the meetings that we have for the regular roundtable.
So that being said, December is our next regular roundtable meeting. Shortly after that, we get into the holidays, so it'd probably be short, just right after New Year's.
I would suggest January for the next follow-up meeting. Does that make sense?
That's wonderful.
Well, okay, you're being kind to staff on there.
Concerned with people availability when they're holidays and we lose
and
everybody.
And we have multiple roundtables.
Does that mean we won't see the kind of first written detailed potential draft scope of work until January? Or could we share that a little earlier?
So here's what I'd recommend as the chair of the roundtable, is that we put together a draft scope of your charter to bring to the round table for approval.
For the December meeting?
Yeah.
That sounds great.
Do we
James,
need that
is that doable?
And I can work with
we can do it at staff level and put it as a proposal on the agenda.
Yeah,
there.
And I'm happy to work with you guys on that.
And discussion at that time and finalize it.
Yeah, we can work internally, then distribute it to the members, bring it to round table in December.
Yeah.
And
because it's not a Brown Act.
Just for the record, one of the frustrations has been there's four or five or six different types of ground-based noise. Those of us who have been dealing with it we're a little bit more up on the terms, but the rest of the roundtable isn't, and they may think that backblast is the only thing. And when we kind of throw it at them, it happened last month. It's like, oh no, we only want to be ground bait or backblast, but no, we actually want to look at the range of things. So I'm just concerned that if the approval of our work plan goes to the full committee without us really working it through that it may discount a bunch of the other situations.
I think that's why it was so important to hear Terry, to clarify Terry's question early on, because that was an issue at the round table.
Yeah, and we heard that spectrum of comments in regards to both backblast as well as facility potential noise.
And so with that, guys?
So to accelerate things, you're going to send out the note of the three subgroups. Nothing would preclude us from submitting questions for the subgroups to consider, right? In the interim.
Sure, and whatever we can answer, we can.
Thank you all. So happy to have you all here.
Okay, you guys, and just again, once again, I just want to remind everybody, we're not going to eliminate the problem altogether. The whole idea is the whole idea after we get done on doing this is to try to figure out if there's ways that we can make it a little better. But we're all going to live around the airport. It's still going to be there. We're trying to make it just slightly better. And with that, meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you all for being here. Appreciate it.